damsels upon whom it seems to me the entire reputation of an eligible young man depends.
You are quite right. As naturally, male and female seek one another. Does more to stimulate a man to acts of courtesy, honor, and generosity than love. And if you desire to marry, you must realize that a mistress is won by the good temper and grace displayed by a dancing. For ladies do not like to be pressed with fencing and tennis, unless a splintered sword or a blow from a tennis ball should cause them injury. And there is more. This, for dancing is practiced in order to reveal whether lovers are in good health and sound of limb, after which they may be permitted to kiss their mistresses in order to touch and say to one another, thus to ascertain if they are shapely or emit an unpleasant odour as of bad meat. But from this standpoint, quite apart from the many other advantages to derive from dancing, it has become an essential in any well-ordered society.
Thank you. Thank you. attended with many amorous smiles, wanton compliments, unchaste kisses, scurrilous songs and sonnets, effeminate music, lust-provoking attire, ridiculous love pranks, all which savor only of sensuality, of raging fleshly lusts. Therefore is it me wholly abandoned of all good Christians. Dancing serves no necessary use, no profitable, laudable, or pious end at all. It issues only from the inbred depravity, vanity, wantonness, incontinency, pride, profaneness, or madness of men's depraved natures. Therefore, it must needs be unlawful unto Christians. The way to heaven is too steep, too narrow for men to dance in and to keep a level route. No way is large enough for capering roisters, for jumping, skipping, dancing dames, but that broad, beaten, pleasant road that leads to hell. The gate of heaven is too narrow for whole rounds, whole troops of dancers to march in together.
Shoulder and at right angles to the body.
different stages in the complete movement, for they are not intended to mean that there should be an interval between each part of the whole movement, which would be absurd. What I mean is that there should be no pause, now the three actions should be continuous, so that they appear to be but one single movement, because it is merely one movement divided into three, which seems to me the best method of explaining each action. That is to raise the arm from the side, bend the elbow, carry it to the head, take off the hat, raise it, allow the arm to fall to the side. To put the hat on it, the same order is to be observed. That is, raise the arm from the side to the height of the shoulder, and bending the elbow, put the hat on the head, pressing it down firmly by the brim once only. Do not press the hand on the top of the crown, which would be a breach of good manners. But the head should not attempt to assist the operation. The hand and arm should put the hat on. On the other hand, the hat must not be forced down too strongly, since then it would be difficult to remove. The hat is only to be covered, only to cover and brace the head. The care must also be taken never to hold the hat by the crown, nor to carry the arm and hand too far forward. That would cause the face to be hidden, nor to drop the head and allow the hat to fall over the face carelessly, which would look very ill. In my opinion, the most graceful manner of wearing a hat is to place it over the forehead, a little above the eyebrows, pressing the hand lightly on the brim, so that the hat is placed almost level, but the peak should be a few degrees lower than the back. Now, the button should be on the left side, at the peak or point over the left eye, which uncovers the face. For to wear the hat tilted backwards gives one a foolish and idiotic appearance. Just as to wear it pressed down too much in front gives one a cunning, angry, or dreamy look. Whereas if the hat be worn as I have directed, you will appear well-bred, modest, and agreeable.
Acknowledging this courtesy with a stately inclination,
fatigue of the journey, or the heat of the apartment, or the near prospect of so many gyrating bodies, he presently sank into a lethargy, from which I aroused him. With difficulty, at the end of the performance, as we walked back to our hostelry, I ventured to ask how the performance had pleased him.
Aye, sir, there is a certain brilliance in the young which provokes them to the gratification of their limbs. That same providence which has bestowed upon the ovine species the faculty of frisking and gambling has bestowed a like gift upon man. Aye, sir, even I, in the hotness of my youth, did not disdain terpsichore.
Am I then to deduce, sir, that you rate the performance that we have just witnessed as no higher than that which we may see on any spring day in the meadows around Lichfield?
If you ask me, sir, whether I rate your praise no higher than that of a sheep? No, sir, the unpremeditated antics of the lower creation may please for a while, but since they lack the regimentation of art, they presently engender tedium in an instructed mind.
Sir, I agree with you. I confess I admire to see with what exactitude and nice posturing of their limbs certain mature virgins, nay, even exuberant matrons, pursue the involutions of the dance.
And you, sir, we do not admire that which is contrary to nature. Dancing is the prerogative of the young. And those same females who gain the suffrage of your admiration, half should be bending over a cradle, the other half over a timber frame.
Somewhat discomposed at the heat with which Dr. Johnson had expressed his opinion, I judged it wise to shift the conversation to a more general topic. They tell me, sir, that folk dancing had its origin in the worship of the rude powers of nature.
Ah, what piddly nonsense is this? You may well have been told that the moon had its origin in green cheese, but that is not sufficient authority for your assenting to the notion. Come, sir. You're a pleasant, flattering sort of fellow. See, we have arrived at the dolphin. You shall have a dish of tea.
sound of the room, save the concertina and the champion of the clogs. Every eye was fixed on those clogs. Even the little eyes of Mr. Peake quitted the button of his waistcoat and burned like diamond points on those clogs. Florence herself chiefly gazed on those clogs, but occasionally her nonchalant, petulant gaze would wander up and down her bare arms and across her bosom. At intervals, with her ringed fingers, she would lift the short skirt, and nothing, an imperceptibility, half an inch, with glance downcast, and the effect was profound, recondite, inexplicable. Her style was not that of a male clog dancer, but it was indubitably clog dancing, full of marvels to the connoisseur and to the profane, naught but a highly complicated series of wooden noises. Florence's face began to perspire. Then the concertina ceased playing, so that an undistracted attention might be given to the supremely difficult final figures of the dance. And then, suddenly, the dancer threw up one foot as high as her head and brought two clogs down together like a double mallet on the board and stood still. It was over.
Thank you.
and hauling and embracing and knocking up against the other couple until they are merely tired out and can move no longer. The same scene is repeated again and again, slightly varied by an occasional row until the late hour of night. And a great many clerks and apprentices find themselves next morning with aching heads, empty pockets, damaged hats, and a very imperfect recollection of how it was they did not get home.
I'll say. And to complete the rout, American music also achieved world domination, sharing honours with Coca-Cola and the hamburger, of course. But let's give credit where it's due. American influence this century made the ballroom one of the few truly classless places. And social dancing became one of the most popular pastimes. In fact, Victor Sylvester, no less, felt he could say in the late 1940s that ballroom dancing is easily the most popular pastime in the world. Well, he would have a vested interest in making such a claim, but it's obviously built on good foundations. So let's go on a lightning tour of the ballrooms of England in the last 60 years or so to see what our parents and grandparents might have been getting up to on their evenings out.
Thank you.
When they play rock music, everything is fine. You're in the mood for a dance. And when you get the charm, you are the dancing queen. Young and sweet, only 17. Dancing queen, feel the beat from the tambourine. Oh yeah. You can dance, you can jump, having the time of your life. See that girl, what is that scene? Digging the dancing queen. You're a tease and you turn him on. Leave him burning and then you're gone. Looking out for another, anyone will do. You're in the mood for a dance, and when you get the chance, you are the dancing queen, young and sweet, only 17. Dancing queen, feel the beat from the tambourine, oh yeah. You can dance, you can jump, having the time of your life. Ooh, ooh. governess state, where I am ordering his own affairs, or in directing those of the state, or in commanding an army. Do we not always say, so and so has made a false step in this affair, and can make it a false skin in dance? When a man has been guilty of a mistake, whether either in ordering his own affairs, or in directing those of the state, or in commanding an army, do we not always say, so and so has made a false step in this affair, and can making a false step derive from anything but lack of skill in dance?
Dance out to this, or you can stay and applaud. the members of the company who I'd like to introduce to you. On the drums, from Birmingham, the centre of the world, Trevor Foster. And writing a lot of the music, playing guitar, concertina melodeon, Dave Webster.
Join us in there. Come in for a quick hour's dance now. Thank you. Good night.